This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. There has, of course, been much discussion about the failing standards of English here in Malaysia. But in the process of trying to improve our usage of English, are we actually neglecting the use of Malay? Joining me today to share his thoughts on this is Prof. Syed Farid Al-Attas, Professor of Sociology with the National University of Singapore. Thank you for joining me, Prof.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Recently, you gave a talk at a university, and then you also quoted in some media organizations as saying that the emphasis on English is causing sort of a neglect of Bahasa Malaysia. Could you explain where you're coming from on this?
Yes, I was referring specifically to the use of Malay in academia, in the universities, particularly in the area of the social sciences and humanities. And now, during the last decade or so, there has been a great deal of emphasis on university rankings. Now, one of the factors that impact on university rankings is the extent to which academic staff publish in top-tier journals, which are indexed by the ISI and Scopus and so on.
And these would be journals that are in English.
Now, the vast majority of these journals are in English and some other European languages like French and German. There are very, very few journals of repute which are published in non-European languages, certainly very few in Malay. So there is a mad rush for academic staff to publish in these top-tier journals, which would naturally be English-language journals. There's little interest, therefore, in publishing in Malay. So that affects the standard of social scientific production in the Malay language. It affects the quality as well as, of course, the quantity.
Could you outline for me or make it more clear how that would happen? Because the conventional thinking would be, well, you can still access these works in English. So how does that reduce the quality of a work in Malay?
No, it's not a question of access. Universities are interested in increasing their world rankings. And this is a directive that comes from the Ministry of Education. One way to increase an important factor in the ranking of the university is the extent to which academic staff publish in these top-ranking journals. Mm. And academic staff would be rewarded for publishing in these journals, and they would be penalized for not publishing in these top-ranking journals. So if you are content with just publishing in the Malay language in lower-ranked journals, if you're content with that, that would be fine, but you would not be promoted. You may not gain a permanent contract in the university and so on and so forth. So most people would neglect publishing in Malay. They'd rather publish in English in the top-ranking journals.
So essentially, the body of work in the Malay language then becomes affected, and there's fewer and fewer quality research being published in the Malay language.
Exactly. So if you are a top academic, you have an international reputation, or you want to have an international reputation, you want to have a presence in Malaysian academia, you want to have permanence in the university, then you'll be forced to play the game. Mm-hmm. And you'll tend not to publish in Malay. And gradually that results in a dearth of publications of a high quality in Malay.
So to play devil's advocate there, are there high quality journals or platforms to publish in the Malay language that would attract that kind of prestige?
I think there are two issues here. One is the general absence of such journals. Now, even if there were high-quality Malay journals, Malay language journals, they're not indexed in these international indices. So what we need to do is to produce high-quality Malay language journals and at the same time have them indexed. Alternatively, don't play the ranking game, which is actually my preference. I think we should encourage Malaysian academics to publish in English and in Malay and to publish in the top journals, but don't be obsessed with the rankings such that people are penalized for not publishing in certain types of journals.
So was there a particular, was there something specific that prompted your opinion on this or the fact that you're speaking about this?
Well, you know, I have been interested in the larger question of academic imperialism, of academic dependency, the extent to which the kind of academic work we do in the social sciences and humanities in Malaysia are conditioned by trends, by developments, particularly in America and in the UK. In terms of theories, in terms of concepts, we are forever looking to the US and the UK for ideas. We merely apply theories that are developed elsewhere to the Malaysian setting. We don't contribute to theorizing. We don't contribute to theory building and concept formation. So that amounts to saying that there's little genuine scholarship at a very fundamental level. When I say fundamental level, I mean theory building and concept formation. Mm. Now, part of this regime of intellectual imperialism or academic imperialism is this ranking system. We're not only dependent on ideas from these American and British institutions, we're also dependent on recognition from them. So we feel ourselves to have made it when we are recognized by their ranking systems. Mm. Rather than develop our own ranking systems and be concerned with our performance based on criteria that we develop ourselves. Mm. If I may give an example, earlier on you referred to, you asked if there were Malay language journals of high quality. Now, we tend to have very few Malay language journals of high quality. And I think that's an easy problem to fix. You know, if the university administrators, if the Ministry of Education would direct resources into the production of high-quality Malay language journals, insist that the editorial boards were comprised of serious scholars who are competent in Malay, and most importantly, make it clear to academic staff that if they published in these high-quality Malay language journals, they would be assessed on par with those who published in the top-ranking English language journals. Mm-hmm. If there is that assurance, then people are not going to prefer to neglect publishing in Malay if they were assured that they would be equally rewarded. Mm. But to be equally rewarded, we have to ensure that the Malay language journals are of international standing.
It does seem to be a little bit of it's one feeds into the other, doesn't it? And therefore, it almost seems like it's difficult to know where exactly to start. Yes, we can incentivize academics, but then if those platforms don't exist, then there is very little incentive for them to want to be published in these journals anyway.
Exactly. But I think it's not very difficult to start these journals, to improve some of the existing journals or to start new journals. It is a matter of will. Mm. There has to be a recognition, first of all, by university authorities, by professors, that many of the existing journals are of poor quality and that they are producing or publishing mediocre works. Once that is recognized, there is sufficient talent in as well as outside of Malaysia, because these journals can be, they may be based in Malaysia, but there's no reason why the editorial boards of these journals can't be comprised of editors from all over the world, mm. as long as they know Malay language. And there are enough of scholars in the UK, in the US, in Russia, in Korea, in Japan, who know Malay language, and not to mention Indonesia. There are also a few Indonesian language journals which are of very high quality, and our staff could be encouraged to publish in those journals, for which they should be told that they would be rewarded.
And what about in the larger Malay-speaking world outside of Malaysia? Are there also quality journals or platforms that we could be looking at to sort of strengthen this initiative?
Well, as I said, there are a few, not many, Indonesian language journals, which is basically the same language as Malay. But by and large, this is a problem that is found throughout the South or throughout the developing world.
Mm.
There are few journals of high quality published in the various languages of the Third World: Arabic, Persian, Turkish, many of the Indian languages, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
This is and this problem is there to a large extent because of this problem of intellectual imperialism.
Okay, so the question might be for a lot of people, especially those of us who have been educated in this largely English-focused system, is there a value even in publishing academic research in, you know, languages other than English, in this case Malay, when English is already widely considered to be the global language of research? Wouldn't this make us less competitive, less relevant?
In a sense, that's the wrong question.
Mm.
Because it's not a question of publishing in English or in Malay. We should be publishing in both languages.
Mm.
And I think top academics throughout the world generally publish in both languages, or at least make certain that their works are accessible in more than one language. I'm referring to non-English speaking countries.
Sure.
So throughout Europe, you find that many of the academics would publish, at least the leading academics, would publish their works in their own language as well as in English or in French.
Mm.
And you find this to be the case also in many other countries in the South. And this is what we should encourage. And we should be in a better position than scholars in many other countries, such as Japan or Korea, where English is still, in spite of the problems we have today, more widely understood than in some of those other countries. So we should publish in English so that the English-speaking world has access to works that Malaysian scholars produce about Malaysia or about topics that are of concern to Malaysians. At the same time, we need to write in Malay to make our works accessible to those who are Malay speakers,
mm.
Not only in Malaysia, but in the Malay-speaking world. And we have to develop the competence to write scientifically in our own language. I think this is essential.
Yes, so that was actually going to be my question. Does that competence exist?
I think the competence, it exists, but it's not widespread. We need to improve that competence.
Mm.
You know, we are in a sad situation that both competence in both Malay and English is at a low level.
Mm.
And we need to improve the competence for both languages.
I think that is actually linked to a larger way in which we teach language, right? And I think we'll get into this later as well in terms of this idea that whether we should teach science and maths in English, for instance. But are there other models or other countries that we could be looking at in terms of this academic publishing in languages other than English that perhaps we could emulate or who are doing a really good job?
Well, I think if you look at some of the European countries, you look at Germany, you look at France, more so, I would say, the Netherlands and the Scandinavian countries, where if you take the Netherlands, for example, there's a high quality of literature produced in English language by Dutch scholars, and many of their works are published in journals produced within the Netherlands. For example, Brill Academic Publishers in Leiden produces many scientific journals, most of which are in English, actually.
Mm.
There is a very high standard of English language articles published in journals written by Dutch scholars. Many of the journals are published within the Netherlands itself. At the same time, there are Dutch language journals which produce scholarship of the same level.
Mm.
I think the models are there, but you know, I want to emphasize that this is not a complicated issue. This is really a political problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of political will. It simply requires proper leadership at the university level.
What exactly do you think is the problem in terms of, if you say it's a political problem and political will, what is lacking? What is not being emphasized?
I think if we talk about the mediocre level of publications in the Malay language. it's part of a larger problem of all-around mediocrity in our universities. We really have to admit that our universities are operating at a mediocre level across the board. I'm speaking generally of social sciences and humanities. We do not produce leading figures in the world or even in the third world in the social sciences and humanities. And, you know, it's amazing that this is true even in the field of Malay studies, where we should be leading. But even in the field of Malay studies, the central concepts, the central ideas, the central theories, whether it concerns the study of Malay literature or Malay history or anthropology, have not been produced by scholars based in Malaysia. They're generally produced by scholars located outside of Malaysia, in the UK, in the US, in Australia, in some other places in the Netherlands. So even in Malay studies, we are not leading the field. So to answer your question, you know, we have a broader problem of overall mediocrity. Once those questions are addressed, and again, it is easy to address. It is easy to, you know, to institute solutions. These are not technical problems. It may be difficult politically because it would require a lot of revamping, a lot of restructuring. We know what should be done. But whether there's the political will to bring about these changes, appointing vice chancellors who are serious scholars, who understand scholarship, appointing deans and heads of departments who are serious scholars, who refuse to play politics, and who refuse to be racist in terms of their appointments, in terms of promotions, and so on. Once these things are put in place, I think we can see some very positive. We would see some very positive changes in our universities.
Mm. On that note, we do need to take a break. But when we come back, I would really like to talk more about a larger idea of this mediocrity and perhaps where it starts, and maybe taking it back to even our schools and in terms of how education is implemented in Malaysia. I'm speaking to Prof. Syed Farid Alatas, Professor of Sociology with the National University of Singapore, about whether the Malay language is being overlooked when it comes to academic study. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm with Prof. Syed Farid Alatas, Professor of Sociology with the National University of Singapore, and we're talking about whether the emphasis on English when it comes to the academic world is eroding the use of the Malay language. Prof. Farid, before the break, you were talking extensively about this idea of mediocrity, right? It strikes me that this is not very different from conversations that we're having about also what's happening at our school levels in terms of there's always this conversation about increasing the level of competency, not just in terms of language, but in terms of a level of thought. And one of the things that has become sort of the hot button issue in the last few years is this idea of whether they should be learning in English, you know, whether we're talking about an entirely English system or more specifically for us, the learning of science and maths in English. And at the moment we have, I think they've implemented in particular schools around the country, the dual language program where certain students actually do learn science and maths in English. But this is something that keeps changing. Now, you do have some thoughts on this in terms of, I think you're not a supporter of the idea of teaching English and maths in English. Sorry, yes. Science and maths in English.
Yes, I do not support that idea because I think those who do support the idea are confusing the issues, confusing the language issue with the mediocrity issue. Mediocrity has nothing to do with language. I think there is a perception that if we teach subjects in English, and since science and math are deemed to be more important than humanities, some people think that those should be taught in English, the standards will increase. Now, nothing can be further from the truth. Mediocrity is a state of mind. Mm-hmm. One can be mediocre in any language. You can be mediocre in Italian. You can be mediocre in Russian. You can certainly be mediocre in English. There are so many social scientific journals out there with low standards in which mediocre scholars contribute. These are often referred to as predatory journals. So we need to have a higher standard of education in Malay so that Malaysians study in the national language and are able to express themselves in the Malay language. Now, if we look at the history of the Malay language, if we look at scholarship in the 16th century, in the 17th century, in the 18th century, we look at philosophical works, theological works produced in the Malay language, where the Malays were able to express complex concepts and complex ideas in the Malay language. That is enough to, you know, to show to us that the Malay language is not inadequate. If we're not producing scientists or scholarship of a high standard in the Malay language, it's a reflection of the mediocrity of the academics, not of the language. And you know, in countries like Japan and Korea, science and math are taught in Japanese and Korean. But the high schools are of a very high standard. They are very competent. And as a result, Japanese and Korean students, after graduating from the high schools and after studying for 12 years in their own languages, are able to gain admission to the best of universities in the world. And there's no reason why we cannot be like that.
Isn't the thinking, though, that so it's twofold, the rationale, right? One being that studying science and maths in English would allow students to function at a more global level, that the concepts, the language, the knowledge that you can access, because so much of it is in English. So that's one. And then, of course, the second is that somehow they think that learning these languages in English will also improve their English competency. So those are the two, you know, main prongs of why people push for this. Now, do you not see some value in that?
I think it's this kind of thinking is a little simplistic. Again, if you look at the Japanese and the Koreans, they have no problem accessing scientific knowledge. They study English. They develop a certain level of competence. Secondly, there is sufficient scientific production within their own languages in the various scientific fields, including both science and mathematics. So they develop a high standard of competence. The same is true of the Europeans. So that I think we have to note. Secondly, it's very important that English be taught competently as a second language from the earliest years, from elementary school. So for at least 12 years, 12 or 13 years, our students should be taught English as a second language at a high level of competence so that they are really effectively bilingual by the time they graduate. And in that case, they would have no problem in accessing works when they go to university. Should they study abroad, or even if they study in Malaysia, they would have no problem reading scientific works both in Malay as well as English. Mm-hmm. So this is all about teaching English as a second language at a competent level.
Mm. And where do you think that we're dropping the ball when it comes to that?
I think the overall level of mediocrity in our schools, mm-hmm. not only in the teaching of English as a second language, but also in the teaching of practically all subjects. I think it has been noted also that students are burdened with too many subjects, when in fact they should be taking fewer subjects, particularly in the earlier years. And there's far too much emphasis on religion, too many subjects devoted to religion. Our students in the schools should be focusing on math, science, of English, Malay, and grammar. And as they move up the years, they should be introduced to history and literature, geography. But they should not be studying, 12, 13, 14 subjects. This is far too much. So again, I think any decent educationist, by decent, I mean an educationist who knows the field reasonably well, will know what to do. So I really feel that the government should take heed of what some of the very reasonable educators out there are saying about what needs to be done in order to revamp our education system. It's not something very complicated. We know, as I said earlier, we know what needs to be done, but we need to have the political will to bring about these changes.
I did find it very interesting when you talked about this idea of academic imperialism, right? Because do you think that some of that inability to publish or create work in our own language comes down to also a sense of insecurity that, because there's this mediocrity that exists, and so much of it is so entrenched in the system that by the time we come to a university level, people just don't feel confident to do work in their own language because they feel like it's not good enough.
I think there is a view, and this view exists even among the Malays themselves, that the problem is the Malay language. Mm. That the Malay language is not sufficiently rich such that it can express scientific ideas, it can express complex theories. Now, the inability to express lies with them, not with the language. They're not exposed to the language. They may speak the language, on a daily basis, at the market, at home, to their parents. They may understand a lot of colloquialisms, but very few of them have read philosophical works, have read literary works in Malay, exposed to classical Malay literature. So they don't really understand, they don't really feel the complexity of the language and the ability. They don't know the ability of the language in terms of expression. So I think there has to be development of some pride in the language, some knowledge of what the language can do, and the pride in the language would then develop. It's partly also due to this larger problem of academic imperialism, because academic imperialism exists particularly in the English language, and to some extent in French. In other words, what I mean is that the imperial powers, as far as intellectual production is concerned, are the Americans and the British, and to some extent the French, particularly with regard to the former French colonies such as North Africa. So the imperial powers, linguistically speaking, are the English language speakers. And we have an overall sense of inferiority towards the Americans and towards the British in cultural production. And that extends also into intellectual production.
Is it a little counterintuitive that one of the national policies is to strengthen the Malay language? We have organizations and national bodies that are dedicated to this cause. And yet we have this sort of lack of, not just lack of confidence, but a lack of knowledge of our own language.
Yeah, so it's a situation of contradiction, basically, right? We pay a lot of lip service to the development of the Malay language. We want the Malay language to develop to a high level of competency. We also say that the Malay language is a point of unity among Malaysians. But then you have policies that work against that, such as the policy, that stress on publishing in highly ranked journals. So I think, the left hand doesn't really know what the right hand is doing. So we need to rethink, the whole language policy in connection with education policy.
Mm. You did mention, I was quite interested to hear that, I think this was in an interview you gave as well, this idea that it's also about learning to appreciate and recognize Malay language in a wider context, literature and other writings in the field. Now, how do you see this enriching the field of academics?
Well, being competent in literature, whether it's modern literature, such as modern novels or classical Malay literature, would help in so many ways. First of all, it helps in language competence. It enables one to develop certain skills in the use of the language. It helps one to identify concepts and ideas which one can use in one's academic work. Secondly, we ought not to see a divide between literature and academics. When I say academics, you know, we're referring to, let's say, you know, fields like sociology, anthropology, history. Literature is also part of academics. And the other thing is, reading short stories or novels, or reading the Malay Hikayat, reading the Chinese classics from ancient China, you will find that there are so many insights into the nature of society, so many insights into history, which are necessary for the development of the intellectual mind, of the academic mind. There are things we study in society about society, which are also thematized in literature. For example, we sociologist or a political scientist might study corruption. But we can learn about the workings of corruption. We can learn about the impact that corruption has on the individual, how it is demeaning and so on and so forth from literature. For example, the famous novel by Nikolai Gogol called Dead Souls.
Right.
It's really about corruption in 19th century Russia, but told in a literary way, right? Whereas if we study it as a political scientist or a sociologist, if we study corruption, we study it in a scientific way. But both the literary or the poetic and the scientific mode are necessary to develop the intellect.
But in connection to this, you've also spoken about how there is a certain Eurocentricism even when it comes to looking at great works. So when it comes thinking of great thinkers, that we often ignore people that are closer to home, whether it's, you know, Malay scholars in the Malay world or perhaps in Asia and so on. What do you mean by this exactly? Who are the people that we should be looking at? What are the kinds of works that we should be looking to?
Malaysia is, like many countries in the region and beyond, were colonized, was colonized. And we have inherited the British education system. And with the rise of America, we are also very much attuned to American cultural developments, which is all fine. But the unfortunate thing is that we have neglected our own intellectual traditions. We really ought to be cosmopolitan in terms of, you know, the source of ideas, the ideas that we wish to develop. The source of these ideas should be from everywhere. Now, what we're doing in our education is to look to the US and the UK, basically, as a source of ideas in academic production. If you take an example, sociologists look at a few men from Europe in the 19th century as the so-called founding fathers of sociology: Karl Marx, Max Weber, Emile Durkheim, George Simmel, Alexis de Tocqueville, and so on and so forth. Now, the impression is given that there were no women who played a fundamental role in the development of sociology or social thought in the 19th century, and that there were no Africans and Asians and Latin Americans in the 19th century who also played such a role. When there were, in our own region, one of the most brilliant thinkers who can be considered as a founder of social thought was José Rizal from the Philippines.
That's right, yes.
And he is almost completely neglected in our education system. Most of our university students would never have heard of him, unless they happen to be in a program where, you know, Philippine studies is taught, or you know, they took a course on the Philippines Revolution or Filipino history. Otherwise, the average student in sociology or anthropology or history would never have heard of José Rizal. Closer to home, you have thinkers living about 100 years ago was Haji Omar Said Chokro Aminoto. You had Haji Misbah from Java, from Indonesia, from the Malay Peninsula, Said Sheikh Al-Hadi, and before him, Abdullah Munshi. These were all original thinkers who thought from the perspective of the Malay world, and their works, their writings complement the great Western scholars.
Mm.
But when you take a course on social theory, it's actually European social theory,
right?
But it's presented as universal social theory. So it's, to me, it's quite ridiculous that we would be teaching a course on social theory in a Malaysian university or in an Indonesian university, but only teach Marx, Weber, and Durkheim, and not teach Jose Rizal or Chokrominoto or any of these, Malay world thinkers.
Mm.
It shows the extent to which we are so out of touch or alienated from our tradition.
Have you seen examples or, any faculties, whether in Malaysia or in the region, that are making some kind of effort or headway moving towards perhaps acknowledging some of these roots and more local trains of thought, people?
I wouldn't say that there are faculties or departments that are doing this. There are some individuals here and there who are conscious of the problem of intellectual imperialism, who are conscious of the fact that we are still in a state of coloniality.
Mm.
We live politically we live in a post-colonial period, but culturally and even economically, we're still in a state of coloniality. There are people who recognize this, but these are individuals. I think this problem has not been recognized by the university administrators. It's not seen at the level of the ministry. As a result, the changes that are taking place right now are at an individual level. If you are a lecturer and you're conscious of the problem, you may teach differently.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, the university curriculum doesn't change.
Mm. And it still doesn't resolve the original starting point of this conversation, which is this idea that you are sort of almost pushed to publish in English in
yes.
journals that are not Malay language journals.
Yes.
And that's something that really does need a more organizational change to happen, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Prof. Farid, for coming and talking to me about this today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Prof. Syed Farid Alatas, Professor of Sociology with the National University of Singapore, about whether the emphasis on English in academic institutions might be eroding the body of research we have in the Malay language. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.